Around the world, people are working to bring a greater sense of balance to the planet. Earth Wisdom Circles is here to showcase these people and projects. Now, here's your host for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elaine Grohman for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio. And my guest today is Dr. Nicole Roberts, who is the founder of Health and Human Rights Strategies in Washington, D.C., and she is also the newly appointed executive director of Feed a Billion. I had the pleasure of meeting Nicole several years ago and am really honored to know her and to witness all of the incredible things that she's doing for humanity to help us understand the importance of the care we so desperately need to be aware of as we care for our world and one another going forward. So welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And first of all, I also want to state, just to kind of get it out of the way, I know that you're in Washington, D.C. So, you know, you are right in the middle of all of the chaos that is happening. And so please stay safe and
thank you.
And do all that you need to do to help us understand what's really happening in our world.
It's a lot.
So
right
now. I know. So as a let's back up and say when I first met you, you were a policy advisor. So under the auspices of being the founder of Health and Human Rights Strategies, can you tell us about that and how you began in this work, and then we'll move into where you are now, please.
Sure. It's a path that I wouldn't necessarily recommend to other people in terms of entrepreneurship. That's just the truth. I had my background. I thought I was going to be the greatest neuroscientist ever. I obsess over human behavior. And then I reached a point where I thought I could do a lot more if I helped change the systems as opposed to seeing like one patient at a time. And so I took a different route and I went into health policy and got a master's in public policy and a doctorate. I'm a doctor of public health. And in my path, I found myself struggling, to be honest. I would go do work, particularly overseas and in these communities where people just, they needed a shot in hell, right? To just have a life. And then I would come back and I would work in like a consulting firm and sit in a cubicle in a suit and make PowerPoints. And I just really struggled to process both of those things. I kept thinking of what I could be doing in the world as opposed to trying to match font colors to logos, you know, to give a presentation. Right. And so I reached a point where I just said, I've got to go do what I feel like I'm supposed to do. And so I started my own company, but I didn't have a plan. I didn't do any of the legwork one should do before quitting their job, starting their own company. Those first couple of years were exceptionally difficult, but I was able to say yes to the things that I thought really mattered. And there's so much, particularly living here in DC, there's so much that's determined by who benefits, you know, what it costs, what, and the point of health and human rights strategies was sort of just filling in those gaps, because the people who need the most help are the ones that can't afford the high-priced consulting firms. They can't afford those, you know, nice-to-haves. And so that was the goal. And over the years, sort of assembled a band of players. Everyone sort of worked on contract when they were needed. And basically, if a problem presented itself and it fit with our mission, then I'd call and say, hey, here's our little budget. What can we do? And a lot of times it really involved just our network around the world of, you know, we know someone who did this in the Bahamas. There's no reason we can't use those same resources in Haiti. Two different island nations, but the same sort of strategy in tackling problems.
Well, and I sometimes think, Nicole, that it's advantageous to know that you don't know, or to not have a prescribed way of thinking that you have to follow someone else's plan. Because then you can be more directed by your own spirit and by your own intuition and by what seems to be presented to you. And I think that the right people come around because of the intention of what you're doing is so important and doesn't have an agenda, say, so to speak, as you had mentioned. Mm-hmm. So thank you for having the gumption to do it. And meantime, you then got your PhD.
Doctor of Public Health. Yeah.
Okay. So then because of that, you are now also the global, or you're a part of a global good podcast that you are. Yeah. Are you the producer? Are you the interviewee? What do you do there? Can you explain a little bit about that? You're the host.
It is the newest, like, brainchild. It is days old. The concept is not, but the actual production. So it's just coming out. It
Good.
Started as an idea for a TV show, actually. And basically, I was thinking, really, that people are thirsty, I think, to learn and to do good. People want to help, but they often feel like they don't know how. They don't know where to Yes. start. They don't know who to trust. And so more than a year ago, I just thought, wouldn't it be nice if there was a way to expose people to all these things they don't know and then, like, hand them the resources. And so in my mind, it was like a Nat Geo travel show where you go somewhere. Like, a minute ago, I mentioned the Bahamas, right? People don't think about the fact that islands don't have clean water. Inherently, they have no clean water. And so I thought, you know, let's go to the Bahamas where people think of vacation and fun. And let's talk about the fact that the islanders who live there don't have access to clean water. Well, there are a few different ways we can make clean water. But then if we can do that there, we can do it in Flint, Michigan. We can do it other places. And so that was where we started, thinking big, beautiful colors, going to all these cool countries, and then pandemic. And so it's been really hard to travel, and certainly with a team to do those big sorts of undertakings. And so I decided, my husband's very tech savvy and I have a great network and I'm super curious by nature. And so we decided to just change the medium, and it's going to be very much like this. And so each week we will go somewhere in the world via podcast and video. And I will talk to someone who's just doing remarkable work. And the goal is to spend about 30 minutes each week learning why. Our pilot actually is a doctor in Rwanda who grew up, I think he was 7 when the genocide started. And so his entire life was shaped by genocide. And it's only been, I think, like 27 years. And yet the country is thriving. He is working in these eye clinics that the pandemic showed them are completely sustainable. They're really the model of teach a man to fish. And once they couldn't have any outside help, this whole year they've been doing well. They've got more doctors and nurses and patients. And so, you know, I thought, here are clinics people can donate to. When they can, here are places people can volunteer. Here's a model that works. Other countries can be doing this. And so I just, yeah, something like that. Each week, someone who's just been resilient and is using their skills to make the world better. And there will be some pretty famous people on it. I love showing a different side of people. Like, they know you for this, but you're actually doing this stuff that really matters. But the goal is to really interview people who deserve attention and credit for the work they're doing, but they're so busy doing the work, they're not trying to get on shows. And so I want to give them that platform. And then the website's going to be completely interactive. So anything you hear, you can learn more, you can read, you can donate, you can connect, so that it really does global good, like it just grows upon itself.
Thank you. I think that that's so important. And like Brent Carey, who started Empower Radio, who had been in, you know, the regular news media for a long time, recognized very similar to what you're saying. There's a need for empowering people. There's a need to have, like what we're doing right now, to speak to people that otherwise would be difficult to get the chance to talk to because of their busy lives, or, as you had mentioned, they're so involved in what they're doing. So I thank you and I applaud you for doing that. And I look forward to...
We'll see.
It'll be amazing. It'll be amazing. I have absolutely no doubt. Well,
you're a pro at this. We're excited, but it's hard. This is a hard medium to do both the video, the audio, to do it well, to tell a story. I've been learning a lot for the last few months that we've really been focused on this. All those things are difficult by themselves, but then you throw them all together and it's an adventure for sure.
It is. But I think that it's a beautiful way of our world that we can immediately show people, this is how you can do it if you choose to do it, or this is maybe a guideline, so that we see that across the globe we have similar, not identical challenges, but in one place or another there might be the spark of an idea that says, gee, we have that here, or we can do that here. And I think the immediacy of having, as you just mentioned, links that people can contact people with ideas or expertise, you know, that beautiful diminishing of barriers is so important. And I don't think of myself as an expert. I just think of myself as somebody who loves people. And I love life. So I think that when you have that, you're not a threat. So if you're not a threat, people will open to you more. So thank you for what you're doing for all of that. And I think it'll be amazing. And this brings me to this amazing work that you're doing now with Feeding Children. Please explain, if you will, Feed a Billion.
Sure. Feed a Billion is where my heart is. It was not a plan. At all. In fact, I have known the founder, his name is Ambush Jain, AJ. Dr. Jain started Feed a Billion in 2016, and he started with this big vision of on any given day we should be able to feed a billion people. And his first goal was to, you know, provide a billion meals. And that number is very big. It's a very lofty goal. And yet when you think about, you know, like he's originally from India. When you think that there's 1.5 billion people in India, and certainly now with the pandemic, I mean, 1 in 6 people around the world don't know where their meals are going to come from this next week. And so all of a sudden you start thinking about the scope of food insecurity, and all of a sudden feeding a billion all of a sudden seems like that's not enough. We have to do
that's
more.
Right. That's
and
right.
So basically in 2020, we sat down and had a conversation about what the organization had accomplished in its 4 years, what its goals were. He had asked that I help with a few changes in operations. And what we found is we needed to focus more than anything. We really needed to focus because trying to feed a billion people, when you look at the scope of the globe, there's a lot of moving parts. And so we got to the core of who's the most vulnerable. Where can we have the most impact? What's most meaningful? What's most important to him, to me, and to everyone else that works around the organization? And it became very clear that girls are the group we want to focus on. And the reason is, first and foremost, when families make hard decisions, it's often girls who end up getting the short end of the stick. And that's all over the world. It could mean that they're pulled out of school to work. It could mean that they're married early. It could mean lots of other forms of exploitation. Yes. And so, the World Bank says for every dollar invested in girls, there's at least a $16 return on investment to the community. And so we decided to get back to the basic human rights of how to address what's happening around the world. And we decided feeding girls is what we could do. By providing a meal, we ensure that a family doesn't have to make a hard decision, and we can ensure that girls are getting the right nutrients that they need to develop properly, mentally, physically, emotionally. Food is safety. It's security. It's your ability to grow and to develop. And so particularly during the pandemic, I couldn't think of a better place to put all my energy and time than in trying to feed girls. So that's what Feed a Billion does. And we say we are, you know, feeding girls around the world to prevent exploitation.
Well, you know, thank you for that, Nicole. And I think that you're so right. And myself, I'm in Michigan, and I'm a part of an organization called Cares of Farmington Hills, and we're feeding in excess of 600 families a month. And we're in a seemingly affluent area, you know, but people make a lot of presumptions that if you live in a particular vicinity, that you must have access. And that isn't necessarily true. And certainly, as you're so aware, and you just articulated that because of the pandemic, people that were employed no longer are employed. Mm-hmm. And at the peak of the numbers of families we were serving during the midst of the pandemic, in terms of when it was just starting, there was 1,200 families a month that we were feeding. And we have just recently added 100 families. So it's not just 100 people. There's, you know, one family in particular has 11 children because it's a foster home, and they're caring for children that otherwise would have nothing.
Exactly.
So it's so important that we look at that. And I think that one of the, you know, you're very deeply aware of your own spirit, and you're very deeply aware of your intuition. And one of the things that I think is so important is we forget that those things are accessible to us when we are nourished, that we can actually think when we're nourished, that our emotions are balanced when we are nourished, or at least when our minimum of our personal needs are met. Yeah. Then we can have some kind of level of quote-unquote normalcy, or at least dependability. And tell me what you think, Nicole. One of the things that I'm working with now is, and I could envision how this really needs to be more of a global awareness, mm-hmm. is how do we begin to help people? Yes, there's the immediacy of feeding people, mm-hmm. but how do we help people begin to learn how to work with the land so that the food can come from their immediate environment? And what will grow in their vicinity, providing that they have what they need?
So, I mean, that's an incredible question. And honestly, you know, when I say like families make hard decisions, we roll that back to what, you know, helps them make better decisions, food. You're taking it even a step further. How do we produce, and how do we make a sustainable, you know, environment and a production of food that can be distributed? And obviously there's no easy answer, or someone would have done it by now. I think, to your point, there's sort of the word that comes to mind is sort of spiritual side of, I think most people, and I'm wearing an American hat while saying this, don't think of ourselves as stewards of the land. I think mm-hmm. people think of ownership of land. They think of, you know, all these different things. We have plenty of farmland. We have, you know, subsidies in place that tell farmers what they basically saying, we'll pay you for this, but not that. And then all of a sudden you've got an apple that costs $4, but it's easy to produce things with corn syrup. You know, you can have a Happy Meal for $4 or an organic apple. Well, of course, you know what decision a mom's going to make. I mean, you've right. made it for her, essentially.
Exactly.
And so I think the incentives are all wrong. I think we think about the land wrong. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to change those. When you look internationally, I think there are a lot of the same problems, but they're also different. So when you look at you know, population, so earlier, you know, you said India, China, I mean, they have 1.5 billion people, right? Yes. Each one of them. And so obviously the way they use land is going to look very different than the way we do, right? They don't have Montanas. They don't. And so I don't think there's a one size fits all answer. I would hope with globalization, there's means by which we can more efficiently move food and products around to the people who need them. But I think the problem gets back to just how we think about and interact with the production of how we think about food, how we love food and the environment, and how we don't.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, that's a big conversation to start, and that's one of the things that I'm working to start.
Well, that's something, you know, we've been playing with this idea at Feed a Billion to this summer in 2021, maybe May or June, doing a one-day summit. And that's actually a discussion we've been having of sort of, in a one-day summit, can we paint that picture that shows the mm-hmm. ecosystem that has everyone from the planters, those who are stewards of the land, to the companies that can help mass, you know, distribute, to people like us who work with local partners to make sure the right schools and whatnot have food. And then all the way to, we work with some organizations, you know, I said preventing exploitation is our goal. And so we work with partners who do things like even extract girls from trafficking situations. So
yes.
it's
yes.
The scope of a summit for a day that covers everything in that ecosystem is a lot, but it is something we're playing with. So I welcome your contributions on how to make it easier for people to understand, because I think just, you know, to what we're talking about now, people like things that are easy, A, B, yes, no, good, bad. And I think that's demonstrated a lot by where we are culturally in America, but around the world. And what we're asking people to do, what you're asking people to do, and I'm asking people to do, is to take multiple steps. Food means families can and cannot do certain things, which means they make decisions. Those decisions are what determine whether a girl is basically lives in poverty the rest of her life, right? If she's married off at 15 and is never allowed to finish school, get an education, you know, live up to her full mm-hmm. potential, and the cycle just then repeats itself. And maybe I'm biased living in DC right now, but it feels like, particularly now, people are not wanting or able to, maybe it's the emotional capacity we all have, to think about those things that take multiple steps. It's so much easier to be yes, no, like I said, good, bad, black, white. But when you give people a dichotomy, they don't have to expend a lot of energy.
But in reality, the interesting thing is that they do expend a lot of energy, because fear burns your energy away.
True.
You know, that when your body is in a, we make the mistake because we have been taught to disavow, or we have been taught to ignore, that we are a spirit in a body, and that we navigate the world through our emotions. And if we understand what our emotions are conveying, then we can use our mind, that is very different than our brain, to make a decision based on the information our emotions are providing. And then we can move forward by learning, and then become very aware that we are a self with a capital S that then has the capacity, because everything, if we look at it, we've been, you know, I talk often, Nicole, with people that we have to change what our belief system is. And first of all, we have to understand, what do we even believe? And what does a belief mean? And if we look historically, and I'm actually writing a lot about this right now, because I'm working on my third book, a belief is intended to stop you from thinking. A belief is something that, if you believe something, so look at people right now, if they believe something, then they will kill and die for a belief without really understanding, where does that belief come from? What is the purpose of that belief? Is it to create groups of people that have quote unquote the same belief that then pits someone against another? Or it is better, to use a word that's often used in the same context, but not exactly the same, is can you have faith? I choose to have faith that I can see. I have faith that I have an intellect, that I can look beyond what everyone is putting in front of me. What is the real reason for the problem? Rather than saying this is the problem because so-and-so says it is. So when we look at the fact and your deep awareness is just beautiful, because you help people to see what they don't see. And then when we see what we don't see, then we actually start to have vision. So vision is a part of our dynamics of the mind that we can envision what is possible. So
that's great. I was like nodding along and like absorbing all of that as you were saying it.
So we think that there's a problem. There's no problems. There's only opportunities. The problems are what is existing that isn't working. Now we have an opportunity to recognize that it isn't working and see if there's a way to correct it or to make it workable in a sustained way.
I love that.
So tell us about some of the individuals and families and locations where Feed a Billion is already, you know, has evidence that what they're doing is so important to follow that lead.
Sure. I'm still processing what you just said about beliefs and faith, vision. So, you know, opportunity, I love that. So Feed a Billion, I think, is the perfect demonstration of that, of, you know, the founder. And I believe all good nonprofits, if not businesses, but nonprofits in particular, pivot. It's absolutely necessary, because if you go in and you understand the exact problem and you meet the exact problem, then your organization shouldn't exist after, you know, a set amount of time, because you've solved the problem.
Right.
And so if you're really deeply integrated into the problem, you're going to learn lessons as you go, which means you're inherently going to change your operations. And so I love that, you know, Feed a Billion right now is primarily, we all live in the US at the moment, but India and Kenya are where we do most of our work. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking to, in 2021, expand to several other countries and cities and towns. But, you know, in India, it's the perfect example of lessons learned over time. What started as providing a hot meal, a nutritious meal, an unintended consequence was that in certain places, when a family found out that a girl was provided an additional meal, they would actually take a meal away from her and distribute it amongst their other children. So that is not at all what we planned. The goal was not to substitute a meal. It was to be, you know, an additive, a complement. So that wasn't going to work. And so we actually found partners, one of which is called Blend Hub, and they distribute all over the world. But what they do is they take combinations of nutrients. Like, you and I would think of it like a protein shake is the easy way to think of it. You know, you open the pack, or what it has all the nutrients you need. You shake it up with water, you drink it, and you've met, you know, so many of your daily requirements. And so we pivoted to do that, because, and this is where I love sort of wearing that human behavior neuroscience hat from my past, is thinking through, you know, what we intended to do, we did, and then realized it was having consequences we hadn't planned for. But if you change the frame of what that meal is, you get a completely different response. And so, you know, I think the greatest success story in India is partnering with a school called Yuva. And they have a girls' school, but it's also about soccer or football. And kids play. Inherently, that's what they do, right? They play. And you don't even have to speak the same language to play. And so these nutritious shakes can be handed out daily while they play, on their way to school, on their way home from school. And a family doesn't think of it as an additional meal. But we know that every day then those girls are getting the nutrients they need to develop. And all these formulas have been created to meet standards, whether they're FDA standards, whether, you know, and so we are making optimal solutions for young girls, for their brains and bodies. But then in Kenya, for example, it's very different. We built kitchens in schools. And so instead of handing out meals, it was easier and more culturally appropriate to build a kitchen with a smokestack at the school, and they make their own meals and distribute them. So for us, there's no one model. We sort of learn as we go and find that obviously in different communities, the solutions look very different. But then we can also say, you know, say in Kenya, say, well, 400 girls attend that school every day. And so then you can start looking at those sort of monitoring and evaluation metrics of here's how many are fed every day thanks to this new kitchen. Here's how many can be fed if we build one more kitchen. Or then with the shakes, that can be kind of easy to count just in terms of handing them out. But then you run into other problems of like, well, then you have to have clean water. So how do we ensure that there's clean water, which is not our, you know, not our mission. So that's a whole new set of partners. So
everything goes in hand.
Yeah, it's a constant adventure. Every local partner, we have to really, really trust that they know their community best. And it's, you know, our job is then to ensure they have everything they need to feed girls.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we also have to look at, you know, to feed, to be fed. As a child is born, for instance, life has already provided the most exquisite, perfect nutritional liquid in breast milk, which is this incredible combination of all the minerals and all of the things that are necessary for life to thrive and to help this little infant grow. So all of what we have is right in front of us. It is created by life. We have an arrogance of mind that I think is born of belief systems that when we disavow a female human being, we disavow life itself, because it is only a female human being capable of bringing a life forward. It is only the living Mother Earth that is birthing already everything we need. So it's a collective patriarchal belief system that gratefully now is in the time of it losing its grip. But we're in a time of people trying to hold on to that belief as long as possible and as vigorously as possible until they can't anymore. Because no human has ever been born from anyone other than a woman.
We've faced some newer challenges, not in any of the countries we're working in other than the U.S., we have faced a little pushback on, you know, what about boys? What about, and I always say, if there's a child in need, we'll feed them, right? We don't say she can have a meal, but your brother can't. We're sorry. Nothing like that. But to your point, you know, for us, the mission of feeding girls was so important because particularly in other countries, the disparities with how they are treated once they're done with breast milk is so great that it is important to us that we really focus on girls. They grow up to be women. Women, when they can read, when they are fully nourished, they can lead. They can do anything, but they have to have that opportunity presented to them and someone to nourish that and cultivate that.
Right. And certainly the conversation begins at birth, because there are so many cultures, again, with the term belief, they have a belief system that a female child might be inferior to a male child. And so right at the beginning of life, there is that barrier that we need to look at, you know, who and why are these beliefs put into place? How do they affect the psyche of not only the female, but the male who is the believer or who is expected to uphold that kind of challenge? And certainly with your huge wealth of experience with health and human rights, I'm sure you've seen that time and time and time again.
Yeah, and the founder of Feed a Billion, AJ, he often tells stories about growing up and how And he recalls having many sisters, that the girls would be put to work. They would clean, they would cook, and then they'd be the last to eat. They would feed the boys. The boys would be out playing. They'd be going to school. The girls would be doing the work. And then they would make sure that they were fed, and they would have, you know, they'd be the last in line to eat. And mm-hmm. so, you know, he describes just in his own personal sort of, you know, his personal mission. He, you know, grew up experiencing these disparities and watching them. And as opposed to a lot of those people who just absorb them and think, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. For him, it was, you know, very much, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This isn't a fair system that right. I'm afforded X, Y, and Z. My sisters are not, or my mother is not. I think it's beautiful at 60, he's still so tightly believed, you know, held on to his belief system of that this is where he wanted to put his efforts.
Well, maybe, hopefully he'll live to be 100 and get to see what can happen. Because, honey, I'm a little older than he is, so I want that wish to be fulfilled, I'll tell you that.
Well, he recently was home in India for his father's 90th birthday. And I think for him that was, and I could even hear it in his voice in doing calls and whatnot with him. Like, I think being 60 and then going home to visit his dad who was 90, it kind of hit him like, oh, well, I've got at least another 30 years I can be doing, you know.
That's right.
This work. Right. And so I need to be really, you know, for him. And he even said, like, I want to be very, you know, diligent and focused. And we took that into account when we were doing a lot of our sort of reorganization this past year of what's so, next.
So what is next? That was my question. What is next for what you're doing as you're getting your feet wet, so to speak, or firmly implanted on the earth of talking for those who don't have a voice? You're speaking for those that don't have a voice.
And that speaking is, you know, I mentioned like we're trying to put together a summit. I think being able to tell this story is important. I think until people can have an easily digestible way of understanding sort of the chain of events that happen, they're always just going to keep overlooking these things. So I actually think telling that story and getting all the right people in place to help paint that picture is really important. Beyond that, I think this next year, I don't want to use the word commercial. That's not the right word. But so we're launching a program. So I mentioned Blend Hub, our partner who distributes, as the actual distribution around the world.
What is that called again, please?
Blend Hub.
Oh, Blend Hub. Excuse me. Okay.
Blend Hub. So we're working on a program with them called Buy One, Give One, a BOGO model. And so when I say commercial, what I mean is, you know, they're actually making products that they can put on the market. So you can go to Amazon and buy them. And when you buy one, it automatically gives one to a girl in need. So I think those kinds of programs will help draw attention to the problem. I think as well, partnerships is really my biggest goal of 2021. The partners we have are incredible. We trust them completely. The work they do is, I mean, we literally are left in awe of what they can accomplish. And so all around the world, food insecurity is doubling, tripling. I mean, the pandemic's last I saw undone at least a decade's worth of work in food security. So I think now it's finding more partners, the right partners who we can depend on locally. And we can set up those networks of, we can get you everything you need. It's up to you to give it to the girls who are most in need and how you distribute that. And I gave those two examples of like India and Kenya, because it can look so different. I think this next year, we're really going to be focusing on these new partners, but then how to start making models that we can replicate. You know, no two programs are going to look identical, but there's a lot of things we now know. For the example I gave of India, learning that something that looks like a protein shake is going to make sure that we don't run into certain issues with what a meal is. It's also much easier to not have to cook a hot meal, right, than to put things in a shake them, and hand them over. So changes like that make it easy for us to put the model other places. So I'd love by the end of 2021, to be working in places that have high trafficking rates as well. So I'm really focused on places like Nepal, Bangladesh, and some other areas that are struggling with trafficking.
Yes, and one of the great, thank you for sharing all of that, Nicole, because one of the things I think is so important when we're working in this way is to be very clear about what is the end purpose, is to help people be self-sufficient, to help people be well enough and in their physical body, that their body can grow and that their body is less susceptible to viruses, illnesses, trauma, that keeps them in a healthy situation so that they can have a longer sustaining life. And the reality is we can't do it alone. No one can do anything alone. And when we don't have, I always use the analogy or think of the analogy of being in the center of a circle. So when you're in a circle, you have 360 degrees of opportunities around you. But if you choose to have a very polarized belief system, you will only choose to see what is right in front of you. So, you know, like party lines, for instance, you know, why on earth would we need party lines? A line by definition means something straight in front of you. And it is when we have the ability to look across to the individual to whom you're speaking and look around and without the need for silly protocols, then we can get a lot more accomplished in a fairly short period of time. Because yes, of course, as I said earlier, what we need, and thank you for having the wisdom to look at, well, how do you quote unquote camouflage, now that you're trying to dupe anybody, but how do you get food into the hands of someone under the guise of just being an immediate protein thing? And, you know, we have to look at, we didn't give ourselves our lives, but we owe life the respect of continuing it. So I think that there's a huge, huge broader way of examining why are we even here? You and I, why are we born? Why is it that I met you? Why is it that I sat next to you at a table? Why is that? It's nothing is by accident. But we have the opportunity to either deny or to move forward. So I really applaud you and all that you're doing to be a global leader, and you are. And so to be a leader doesn't mean you need accolades. Mm-hmm. It means you're just showing a direction. And it could be a whole, you know, labyrinth of ways. Mm-hmm. But a labyrinth isn't meant to confuse. A labyrinth is meant to show you all the possibilities.
True. Yeah. And as you said that, I actually thought about the podcast. And I love that concept of, I'm not trying to show anyone the way, because the point is I don't have the answers, but this idea of each week being able to present someone who's doing something that at least opens up a new door, I think. My ultimate goal, if this thing succeeds, is that I actually have no idea the scope and scale of what it's done. Like, it is to go do global. It is me saying, here's a story, here's a person, here's resources, go forth, right? Like, you don't need me anymore. I've given you everything you need. You can now contact them directly. You can call your friend and you can go work for them. You can do whatever you want. You can donate. And of course, I'd like always to hear what comes of things, because it's inspiring. And like you saying, us meeting, I very much believe 1 + 1 can make 50 if the right ones are introduced to each other. Mm-hmm. And so as you said that, it made me think, I thought, oh, that's actually what I'm trying to do, what you just described. Open up a new sort of, you know, piece of the pie and say, here it is. And then, you know, people can can choose to do what they want with that information. And under no circumstances should I try and guide what it is that they do. I mean, they're going to be 10 times more creative than I could be. I can just open the door.
And, you know, and I think that if we're wise enough to, and I mean everyone, if we learn to really stop judging and ask people, is what you're doing workable? Not is it replicable, but is it workable? Does it contribute to the betterment of everything? And so we learn how to be more grounded in our capacity to comprehend. And then we can look at other opportunities. So I think that one of the big challenges right now is everyone wants to be right. But their right is only a concept. Is it workable? Is it beneficial? Is it inclusive? That's a question we get to ask people.
I think when we started this conversation, you said sometimes you don't know. And at the start of the pandemic, I had lots of conversations with people in and around healthcare, obviously, in the public health space. And I have found there are some, even just going to the microcosm of hospitals in the U.S., there are some that have responded well and there are some that have not. And what I have noticed, in fact, I might write about it, is it really came to, obviously resources, but leadership. And those leaders who on day one said, we don't know. We have no idea what's going on. We don't have any answers for you, but we're going to have to figure this out together, have been vastly more successful than those leaders who said, here's what's happening, here's what we're going to do. Because they all had to backtrack. They all had to say, oh, that was wrong, right? And having, you know, taking that firm stance when we're literally, you know, there's a virus that no one really knows what it does or how it does it, how it's going to play out, and in what populations it's going to, for people to come in and say, I know, they all look so foolish, but then they kept doubling down and then when someone's wrong and you tell them they're wrong, you don't do it in a very nice, inclusive way. It's natural instinct to double down and dig in. I always say, you know, you can't ever shame someone into agreeing with you.
No.
Never worked.
And, you know, it's so interesting when we, and I say these to people, say these things to people only because I was taught this myself, is we misunderstand what leaders are. And we misunderstand what it means to be in a position of quote unquote authority. So many people banter around or they puff themselves up and say, well, I'm the chief executive officer. I'm the chief this, chief that. Without understanding, where does that word chief come from? And a chief is one who pledges integrity. It's a pledge of integrity. It's not a maybe I'll have integrity. And then they can step into a true leadership of saying, let's find a way. And you know, to be like the head of the herd doesn't mean you're the wisest. It might be that you're the strongest, or you have better vision, or you're more cautious, but you always will have, whether we know it or not, we always will have people that will follow us. You know, if we are a child and we watch somebody being a bully, we could either be the one that stops that bullying or we could become the bully. So even those unaware of the fact that they are leading someone else by example, you have to learn, what does that actually mean? What are we choosing to lead?
And you see that all the time. I mean, there's a reason that like violence in a home is cyclical, right? Children learn behavior. And when it comes to monitoring and controlling your emotion, you learn that directly from the people who are, you know, the grown people that you're mimicking. And so it makes complete sense that we we behave like those around us. We feed off of them. As you were
but
saying,
thankfully, we also know when something is right or not.
Yes. As you were saying about leadership, I smiled, and part of my smile was I thought, I am in no way wise, but
don't underestimate yourself, honey. I'm going to call you on that one.
Very clear to me, as you said, this is Feed a Billion, taking this title of executive director. It was the first time in my career that I honestly, when we talked, I said, oh, I don't care. And up until that point, you know, getting the credentialing for my doctorate, being, you know, trying to always prove myself, I guess, is something that I admit I've done. I felt like I had to prove myself. If I had a certain title or credential, maybe someone would take me more seriously, or maybe I'd get a voice in the room I wouldn't have had without it. And I feel like I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And so when they said, mm-hmm. oh, we can do this title, we can do it. I just like, I honestly don't care. The title doesn't matter to me at all. And we decided to move forward with the title of executive director for a number of reasons. And none of them had to do with me or my preferences, or I can finally say, like, my insecurity. It was done because, particularly in this pandemic setting, I'm having to build partnerships in countries all over the world via Zoom. And so in places like India, having a doctor who's an executive director, it does give them certain signals before we even have the meeting, that I'm allowed to make decisions. I'm a decision maker in the organization. I have a background that's relevant, right? It signals things to them, but it was so nice. As you said that, I was like, oh, maybe I am a leader.
Yes, you are.
I don't care about leading. I don't care about titles anymore. It's just, are we doing the work or not? Is it getting done or not? I don't care about anything else.
Believe it or not, we only have 10 seconds left before we're at 52 minutes. So please tell me the best way for people to get in touch with you, Nicole.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm easy to find on social media. Nicole F. Roberts, obviously feedabillion.org. My website's hhrstrategies.com. And reach out, send an email, let's connect. Tell me your good story. Everyone send me your good stories. Maybe we'll put it on the podcast.
We will. And thank you so much for your time, Nicole. I really treasure you.
I treasure you too. Thank you.
Thank you, Dara. Thank you. And we'll be in touch. This is Elaine Grohman on Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio. Please know that the spirit that is you is more dynamic and more powerful than you have ever known. And let's be together one human species called humanity.